There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile, hour number two. Glad to have you here on this Wednesday. Let me just take a second. Our buddy Brendan Kirby is going to join us, author of Wicked Mobile, of course, host and namesake for KirbyOnPolitics.com. But I want to run through the weather real fast because those showers are still slowly training from south to north, a little bit of west-east lean in it, but not a ton. In other words, it's not a front that's moving very quickly. You know, as it gets more of an angle on it, those fronts seem to move more quickly. This one, kind of slow, even to the point that I pointed out at the beginning of the show, was watching a line of showers where they had been training through East Mississippi into Washington County. And that area right there around state line Mississippi and even further back to the southwest up to going through Chatham, what's up, Chatham, going to the northeast of there, had already gotten like 4.5 or 5 inches of rain this morning as the show started. And it is still doing that there. That's going to be the same thing that's going to be taking place unless all of a sudden it starts moving faster. That's going to take place for us in Mobile and Baldwin counties. Obviously, we've already gotten showers. There's a few showers coming through both counties and a good bit of rain in northwest Mobile County, but it's moving slowly. So they're not putting anything up yet except, I think, a wind advisory. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see some flooding out of this in the next few hours. We'll get more from staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams coming up in just a little bit. Y'all say hello to Brendan Kirby, author of Wicked Mobile, and check him out over at KirbyOnPolitics.com. Hey, man.
Hey, good afternoon, Sean.
Afternoon. And remind folks, too, if they have not picked up their copy of Wicked Mobile, there's a Mardi Gras angle in this thing. Maybe a good time to grab that.
Yeah, and the book, just I haven't talked about the specifics of the book in a while, but it's just a kind of look at the rogues of Mobile in the history of the city, and that's where the wicked part comes. And I decided to identify some of the wicked characters in Mobile, and just sort of tongue-in-cheek through Joe Kane in there, because depending on your perspective, he was a wicked character. But anyway, yeah, so there's a chapter on Joe Kane and his life in Mobile, and taking a look at the difference between Joe Kane the man and Joe Kane the myth. Because our venerated figures tend to take on this, you know, this life, this legendary kind of, you know, fake life. It's a little different from how they really are. You know, not unlike Martin Luther King, whose birthday we just celebrated.
Yeah, and I want to get into that in the next segment. I want to talk about the legacy of King. I think a lot of great things you put out on Kirby on Politics. But first, yeah, let's talk about the wall. Of course, the wall is a thing. The wall is now being animated because it's being given human emotions, I guess. That a wall is xenophobic and racist.
Yeah, this is something we hear more and more of. In my most recent blog post, I just went through some of the statements by public figures in the media and politics who have called it a racist wall, a xenophobic wall. You know, Trump wants to build it because he wants to keep brown people out. And the more you think about it, the more it really doesn't make sense, because the brown people, quote unquote, that Trump is trying to keep out are people that we've already decided as a country are supposed to be kept out. We're talking about people who have no legal authorization to be in the United States. And makes them,
well, the same is true
immigrants.
For all people that are illegal immigrants, no matter what. I mean, if you're a legal immigrant,
they're illegal immigrants. And, you know, I mean, when you're talking about illegal migration from the southwest border, you're talking about people from Central America and Mexico, and they tend to be quote-unquote brown. But this is anyone from those regions that has a legal right to immigrate to the United States does. And, in fact, that the top 10 countries last year that sent immigrants legally to the United States are all non-white countries. I mean, we take plenty of non-white immigrants legally through our legal system. This is really about the ones that don't have legal authorization to come here. And Trump wants to build the wall to stop the people who, again, we've decided through our elected representatives in Congress, don't belong here. And so you can argue that the wall is, doesn't work. Sometimes that's argued to achieve that goal, or you can say it's too expensive. And that's fine. You know, you can argue whether that's true or not. But to argue that it's immoral, it's just a tool. Whether we stop illegal immigrants with a wall or a virtual wall or drones or Border Patrol agents, the result is the same. And I'm struggling to try and find out why having a drone surveying people and hunting them down is moral, but a physical barrier is not.
It's a fantastic thought. Sense. Yeah, a fantastic thought, because the Democrats, and I'd say, well, specifically what Speaker Pelosi said and Minority Leader Schumer said, when they say that that they're okay with border security, they're okay with using high-tech solutions and all these things, the net effect, if we're to believe them, the net effect would be the same thing. They believe there's a better way to keep people that are illegally crossing the border from doing it. So why would that be not bigoted? And I think racism as a word gets bigoted. Why would that not be bigoted, but the wall would be?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And you make a good point, because, Mexican is not a race.
Right.
Guatemalan is not a race.
Right, it's bigotry.
From just purely a technical language term, racism is probably not the right word anyway. But if this is about keeping brown people out, and that is the objection, then the wall is irrelevant to that. You know, what you're really objecting to is an immigration system that doesn't let as many people from Central America and Mexico come here as want to come here. And if that's the case, then Congress really ought to pass a law changing our immigration rules and saying that that these laws that keep these people out go away, and you can make it much easier for those people to come here. I mean, if that's what we want to say. But again, the Congress had long before Trump ever even thought about running for office. I mean, these immigration laws go back to the 50s. 1965 was the last major one. They set rules for who gets to come and who doesn't get to come, and then the executive branch is supposed to enforce those laws, and the laws say that these people don't have authorization to come, and so we're going to stop them from coming. So they really need to make clear, is it really just the means by which you're keeping out that you're objecting to? Or do you think that it's racist because you want to keep out, the people you're trying to keep out? In which case, you need to change the law and say they can come home legally. I mean, a wall is not going to stop legal immigration. All these non-white people that immigrate to the United States every year aren't going to be deterred by a wall, because they have a legal right to be here.
And there's a group of people that are also not only opposing illegal immigration, which to me is a rule of law issue, but there's some people that say they oppose legal immigration. They want to reduce legal immigration. I think that's a separate discussion. I've, for one, championed looking at our quota system, look at where people want to come from, and look at what percentages we let in. I think that is a fair and honest discussion to have going forward.
Well, and I think it is too. And I mean, you can put Trump in that category, because he endorsed the RAISE Act, which was sponsored by Senators David Perdue and Tom Cotton last year, or actually it was 2017 now, that they introduced it, that would have made our immigration system more like Canada's and Australia's, which places a premium on immigrants that have skills and education and are more likely to succeed in the modern economy. And that was sort of derided as Trump's attempt to make America white again. But again, there's very little evidence that it would lead to this surge in white immigration, because, people from Europe and
East Asia,
and Canada, I mean, they're not clamoring to come into the United States. What it would probably do is it would have fewer low-skill, low-education immigrants from the Western Hemisphere and more higher-educated immigrants from Africa and Asia. you know, not white people, in other words. So, and again, I mean, you're right. I mean, we can debate what kind of immigration system we want, and whether it should be based on whether or not you have a relative in the United States already to reunite big families, as our system is set up to do now, or whether it should be based on bringing in people who are most likely to benefit the U.S. economy. But it's not a racial argument. You know, I don't really think that the white share of the immigration population would change significantly under those rules, unless you suddenly had a surge of people from Sweden and Germany and Norway and France that were trying to get into the United States. It's just the demand to immigrate to the United States from those places is pretty low.
Yeah, and we also, and this is a whole other show because we don't have time for it, but you know, as we start a kind of means testing program for getting people in, I get it pragmatically, but a little bit of idealism comes through when there's a Sullivan and a Kirby talking, right? And our people had to arrive here a little bit later than maybe some of those other groups.
Yeah, and that's the argument you always hear. We're a nation of immigrants. Well, we certainly are a nation of immigrants. But as Sullivan's and Kirby's can attest, it hasn't exactly... We haven't always been the most welcoming country to immigrants.
Right.
You know, we were a much less welcoming country to immigrants, you know, when our ancestors immigrated than we are today. But the question is, you know, our needs change. And in the, you know, in the late 1800s and early 1900s, we needed huge numbers of laborers to fuel the Industrial Revolution. And the fact of the matter is, that's not how the economy is set up today. You know, our the premium for manual labor is going down. Wages for people who don't have beyond a high school education are flat or declining in real terms. That's just not how the economy works anymore. You know, we need people with advanced skills in education because those are the ones who have jobs. We don't have huge numbers of factory jobs. Those factories have closed, and the ones that remain do a whole lot more work with a whole lot fewer people. So to say that we should have the same immigration system in 1900, you know, because that's the way it was and it's like a fair, again, I guess it depends on, are you looking at this for what is best for foreigners who want to come into the United States? Or is your metric what's best for the United States? Obviously, if our immigration system is for the immigrants, then we should let anyone come in who wants to come in. I mean, that's best for them. It's less clear that's best for the country.
All right, coming right back, more with Brendan Kirby. And I guess that means I got to take down the No Irish Need Apply sign. We'll get right back to it.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 122 FM Talk 106.5 in Midday Mobile, Wednesday style. Remember, podcast of this show and the 40-some-odd hours of live vocal programming that we do every week here at the radio station goes up to our podcast site, and you can just hit the podcast tab on the front page of fmtalk1065.com, or even better yet, subscribe at iTunes or Stitcher. iTunes, Stitcher's for Android, old Luddites like me. Or you could go to Spotify, where you get your tunes. You can also get our podcast. And the TuneIn Radio app that you use to stream our station live on your phone, our podcasts are on there as well. All right, continue our conversation with Brendan Kirby from KirbyOnPolitics.com, also the author of Wicked Mobile. I wanted to talk with you. We got gunched up in schedule and had a little schedule change yesterday with Auburn basketball. But I wanted to talk with you about what you put up on Monday and reasons to cheer King's legacy. Man, it's like we're of the same brain a little bit. I was talking about this on Monday. Well said here. Walk us through this.
Yeah, well, you know, the narrative on this day always seems to be, look how far we have to go, you know, racism is still a terrible problem. And especially with our public discourse over the last, you know, two, three years, maybe even a few years back, is, you know, all these racial incidents get, you know, amplified. Mm-hmm. And every time. It used to be every time there was a police shooting, it was national news, which is understandable, I guess. But, you know, now anytime just some random dude does something bad to some other random dude and there are different races, it becomes national news. So it's kind of depressing. But when you look at the actual data, there's really much to celebrate. It's amazing how much our country has changed since 1964, when King gave his favorite famous speech and the Congress passed the Civil Rights Act. If you look at voting or income data or education levels, there's still a gap, but the gap is much smaller than it used to be. And in voting, the gap has disappeared. You know, blacks and whites in the United States vote in similar percentages. In Alabama, actually, in the last election, black voters came out in slightly higher numbers than white voters. So that's something to cheer and celebrate, considering, you know, a bunch of states, including Alabama, effectively disenfranchised black voters not that long ago. And attitudes have changed, too. I mean, when they would, these surveys that have been conducted for decades of white voters, you know, it's startling to see a high percentage of white voters thought things like, should black people have the opportunity to get as good a job as white people? You know, that was not something that was accepted by white voters.
It's worth saying that, because it seems unreal today that wasn't, you know, you don't have to go too many decades back that was a thought process. But yeah, you're pointing out that look at where we are now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just think we don't take enough time to acknowledge and celebrate progress that we've made, and the focus is always on, you know, here are the challenges we have. And, you know, again, I understand that, because the idea is, you know, you don't want to lose sight of the goal, and you don't want to drop the ball, and you want to, and you keep plugging away. But I think human psychology is that if all you're doing is focusing on the negative and all you're doing is pointing out problems, people lose hope and they give up. And this is, like, I find this with, like, world hunger. Mm-hmm. Where actually, you know, the world is a lot less hungry today than it was 50 years ago. Phenomenally less hungry. But, you know, no one ever really focuses on that. They only point to where there are starving kids, and there's so many of them. And I think people just tend to think, oh, my God, this is such a big problem, and it's been going on so long, and there's nothing I can do. So I might as well just, you know, go back to playing my Nintendo, because, what can I do about it? I think people get more motivated to act when they see that their actions, you know, do have a positive impact.
Oh, I think you're right. I think it doesn't take away from the fact that, yeah, you have work to do, but whether it be whatever project, I'm even thinking, as you're talking, I'm thinking about the way I lure my children up mountains, like when we're on hikes and stuff, because I point out to them how far we've come. And I don't discount the fact that we still have to get to the top, but I said, you know, look what you've done already. Look at, and that motivates, that looking and saying, okay, we have come a long way, I think does motivate people to double down. I know there are people on all extremes on both sides of this would like people to be hopeless here and feel like nothing has happened, but I think that's a fool's errand. I think that's well said, because if you see what you've done so far, you'd be defensive of it and less likely to abandon it.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you look at just one metric, the family median income of families headed by black heads of household versus white heads of household, the gap is a lot lower today than it was for, you know, 40, 50 years ago. And it's even lower still among younger people. If you look at families where the head of household is between the ages of 24 and 35, the gap's even lower among that group than it is among older people. The arrow is pointed in the right direction, and people ought to acknowledge that and realize that, and know that these efforts are not hopeless or meaningless, because the fear is people just conclude, well, you know, it's never going to be solved, and so I'm not going to pay attention.
Hey, can you help me with one thing before? And I want people to go tell them where they can go read that and a whole lot more. How do they find that post?
Yeah, go to KirbyOnPolitics.com. That's the blog. And if you go to Kirby's Take, it's sort of in chronological order. So the first one there will be the piece on the wall. But if you scroll down from that, you'll get the previous blog post. So the one right before that one is the one on Dr. King.
All right, and I'm trying to get some take from a couple folks today, people I know that are wiser than me on these things. You make the call. Here you go. Here's your, you make the call. Does Who has the right to decide whether the State of the Union address is going to happen? I mean, Pelosi is Speaker of the House. I mean, head of that body, right? That's literally and figuratively her house. But the president is the head of the nation. He says he's coming for the State of the Union. Can she block that?
It's in the Constitution, that you have to deliver a State of the Union from time to time, as it says. But it doesn't have to be in person. For the first 100 years or so, probably longer, actually, the president just submitted a written document. And then at some point, I guess in the TV era, politicians figured, hey, why submit a big dry document when I can give a big campaign speech? That's where the tradition came from. It's a joint session. So Nancy Pelosi's not the only. But I guess Pelosi could say you can't come in the House chamber, and maybe Mitch McConnell could say, well, you can give it in the Senate chamber. I suppose you could do that. But, yeah, I would guess, if Nancy Pelosi doesn't want Trump in the House chamber, it would be her call. I would hope it wouldn't come to that.
Extraordinarily
petty.
Yeah, I agree. But Lord knows, every day we fall to a new lower horizon on those things and the relationships in Washington. But I was just wondering, I mean, just as a student of it, you make the call, who gets to say what?
Yeah, I have not researched it, but just my gut would tell me that separation of powers,
co-equal branches, right?
The Congress is in control of its own branch, and so they could not invite the president. But again, since it's a joint session, Nancy Pelosi doesn't control the Senate,
right?
Maybe Mitch McConnell could just. It would be very weird looking at a State of the Union though
in the Senate
in the Senate chamber, the much smaller Senate chamber with Trump, and I guess probably just the Republican senators, because if it came to that, I'm guessing the Democratic senators wouldn't show up. It's just a it's kind of a sad commentary on where our politics is.
Well said. All right, check you out on Twitter. What's your handle?
At Brendan K. Kirby.
All right. Thank you, Brendan. Appreciate it, Brendan. We're coming right back. More of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Get an update from Dr. Bill as more rain is on the way for Mobile and Baldwin counties.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
136 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Remember, check us out online. Three big things, top stories of the day, and the latest information we have at one benefit going on today for Officer Tudor's family at Moe's Southwest Grill on Schillinger. Oh, that, thank goodness, is the one of many. We have more coming up, I know, in about a week or so on Saturday the 2nd, I think, of February. And then Tom Claxton, you're listening to me, man. Get back with me. We've got a big one that I know the folks at the Scuttlebutt Network are working on. That's our veteran show on Wednesday nights, and he's working on it with me. And we're trying to get the ink is close to being dry on this, but not yet, but it's close. That's going to be one. And what we're doing, I mean, somebody like me just says we're putting them up on our Facebook page, but a fancy person would say we're curating those fundraisers on our social media pages, Facebook and Twitter, and also Instagram. I'll just say we're putting them up there on the Facebook page. Y'all check them out. And if you've got an event you're doing with your group, individual, church, whatever, to benefit the family of slain Mobile Officer Tudor, let us know. We'll put it up there and make sure it gets attention. All right. Glad to have in studio my friend, although we chat on social media a bunch, but we see each other in person like once every 5 or 6 years. Lanice Ligon from Fox 10 in. Thanks for coming in and being part of this in studio. Thanks.
Oh, I appreciate you letting us take up some of your airspace.
Well, this is good. No, because we got an event to talk about. And let's talk about what's coming up. It's Go Red for Women event. And how does this work? How do we come out?
That's right. So I have Evan Duffy here with me from the American Heart Association. It's the Go Red Luncheon.
Okay.
It's going to be February 1st, and the whole idea here is to help educate women about living a heart healthier life. But it's not meant to be like in a classroom setting, so it's boring and you're falling asleep. And
now go to chapter two.
We want you to have fun, and we want it to be inspirational. So we have an awesome speaker coming in, Jen Hill. She's a Fox Sport sideline reporter.
Oh yeah.
She also reports for the Pelicans, and
yes,
she's from like the Sims area. So she's coming back to talk about her story with heart disease, and we want to fill the place up.
All right, let's talk about this, because heart disease, we think about this, I think just off the top of my head, I think about men in my family that have dealt with it. but it's obviously an issue for women as well.
Well, absolutely. You know, it's the leading cause of death for men and women collectively, but it is one in three women will deal with cardiovascular disease during the course of their lifetime. And so it's a critical thing that we reach out to women and have them do the things that a lot of times they don't do. You know, a lot of mothers and grandmothers and women in general take care of those around them and forget, neglect their own health. But it's important that everybody is kind of doing the things that they need to do to head off cardiovascular disease, because even though you can't overcome the genetic component that causes it, you can make some lifestyle changes that can definitely improve your chances of dealing with it.
When you talk about cardiovascular disease, I mean, it's not just heart attack.
It's not. It kind of spans out to peripheral arterial disease. Stroke is falls under that umbrella, even though it's kind of broken out as a separate statistic.
Right.
Stroke is the fifth leading cause of death in the United States. So, there are all those, anything that has to do with the veins or arteries or heart, we classify as a cardiovascular disease. And if you think in your own immediate circle, you'd be hard pressed to think of someone you know who has not dealt with some form of cardiovascular disease or stroke in their lifetime.
Yeah, that's why I'm glad that you add that with stroke, because now people go, oh gosh, well, Aunt so-and-so and other kinfolk, relatives, that one, for at least in my anecdotal world, it seems to affect the women in our families more than, I think about heart attack and I think about, and I know this is not scientific, but I think about men in my family. I think about stroke. I think about women in our family.
Right. And you know what happens a lot of times is women present different symptoms when they are, for example, having a heart attack. You know, men, you know about the chest pain. You know,
right.
We're all coached up on that. But women's symptoms have sometimes been underrepresented. So women are looking for the chest pain when really the pain may manifest itself in a shoulder or a back, or there may not be any pain at all. It may just be shortness of breath and unexplained weakness or fatigue. So there are all these different symptoms that women may encounter, and we want to educate people about those, because as with anyone who suffers cardiovascular disease or is going into a heart attack, immediate treatment is the key to survival. You have to have, some kind of medical intervention, or else your chances of survival are pretty low, unfortunately.
But the point is we want to stop it before it gets to that
sure.
point, because a lot of it can be controlled. There are some things that you're born into and you just can't help that.
Right.
But even if that's the case, you need to know, should you be on a low blood pressure medication? Should you be trying to get more meditation in your life? And I know people hear that and they think, I don't have time for that. But it's just a matter of finding quiet time.
Right. Yeah, but you have to get people engaged in that conversation. If you say somebody has genetic predisposition to it, now you got to talk to somebody, maybe a woman in her 20s, who may not, it doesn't seem like the thing, I'll deal with that later, Lanise. I'm not going to deal with that right now. Get to me when I'm 60, I'll deal with it.
And as with the case with our guest, our keynote speaker, it happened to her in her early 30s.
Really?
Yes.
And she's an athlete. She was physically fit, did CrossFit, just in fantastic shape,
right.
and kept pushing would experience some symptoms and kept kind of pushing it down the road a little bit. And she found out eventually that she had to stop and get treated, or else her life was literally on the line.
So I've been involved with the Heart Association for a long time. I lost my grandmother to heart disease. It just runs rampant in my family. So at 16, I made changes to make sure that I could do whatever I could.
Of course you did, because you're like one of my most accomplished friends.
I mean,
no surprise that you started at 16.
And and I got teased for it.
You were the person that messes up the bell curve, I mean, you're the person that the extra credit in class be like, shh, let me stop.
Right.
Stop. We want to get... You, but at 16, you addressed this.
I did, because it was important to me, and I made a promise to my grandmother to make sure that others took better care of their bodies. We're so hard on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Sean, if I calculate all the hours that you're in here working, and how much time do you actually make for yourself to just relax? It takes a toll on your heart. And that's what we say, I'll get to it.
Right.
So when they asked me to be the 2019 chair, I was honored, but I was scared at the same time, because that entails planning an event, fundraising for an event, and making sure that, number one, that people benefit from the event, because I know that Alabamians can be better in terms of cardiovascular health.
Sure, the stats are not good for our state. I see the national surveys come out, and it does not look good for us.
No, absolutely. About 30% of us don't exercise at least one time per month. I mean, and about 28% of coastal Alabamians still smoke cigarettes, use tobacco. So those are the kind of things that are huge risk factors. they also involve some lifestyle changes, so you can mitigate that. You know, get active. That's what we encourage people to do. Get out. Just do. It doesn't have to be CrossFit. It doesn't have to be powerlifting. It can just be walk 15 minutes a day to start and kind of ramp up from there. We want people to eat smarter. We want you to put color on your plate. You know, we always were taught to eat our green vegetables. There's a whole rainbow of vegetables out there we need to be eating that are heart protective. We want people, as Lanice mentioned, to take care of themselves in terms of stress. Stress is a huge risk factor. So do those things, whether it's meditation, prayer, tennis, get on your sailboat, whatever you do for relaxation, make time to do it, because you may not have time later if you don't take care of yourself now.
That's scary, and that's probably resonating with a lot of people. Let's talk about this coming up, getting tickets, tables. Walk us through how we get involved.
Well, we still have tickets available. Tickets will also be available at the door, $75 individual, or if you want to get a table, I think it's a little bit more than that. But we have the ticket information on the website for you, and also I've been posting all over about it on my social media platforms. I think it's algolfcoastgored.heart.org.
You nailed it.
Very good.
It's a long website.
It's like she's used to.
And it's February 1st at the Riverview Plaza from 10 until 1. The actual luncheon starts.
Yeah, what's for lunch? You got to ask this. At
heart
the,
healthy.
Well,
yeah.
I'm not telling you, because you'll come, right?
Okay, yes.
And that'll be your pleasant surprise. But from 10 until 11 is like health screenings and that. And then from 11 until 1 is the luncheon where we'll start to hear from our guest speaker.
Okay, wait. So we can do the screenings there?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, just do we have to bring, if we're doing screenings, do we have to bring, like, just ID or just sit down, roll up your sleeve? How does this work?
Show up. Show up with a willing heart, and you can get screened, yeah.
Well, that's good, because usually we have this story, be like, yeah, you can, but make sure you bring the following 16 items with you. Just show up.
Right, that's it.
It's fantastic. I tell you what, we're going to put this up on our Facebook page and on the Twitter feed as well, and this is, once
Don't
again, coming up.
Don't forget Insta.
Yes, and Instagram. Yes, Insta. Oh, I'm sorry. The youth in here talk. The IG. Yes, I'm an old fogey. I just call it the old. I'm old fashioned. I just call it Instagram. All right. Best of luck. This is fantastic. Thanks for what you're doing.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks for ruining the bell curve for the rest of us.
Well, I try.
So 1:46. Coming right back. More on Midday Mobile here at FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 151 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Wednesday. I'll tell you about my friends at Harry's. I've been telling you about them for a long time because I've been shaving with them for a long time. And the deals keep getting better and better. This may be the best of the introductory offers I've ever seen from the folks over at Harry's. I love the shave. I love the blades from Harry's. I also like it. I got to be frank with y'all. I like saving money. You know that about me. And I like convenience. I like those blades showing up in my house, not having to go run out and get blades when I forgot, like late on a Sunday night because you have a big meeting on a Monday. Don't worry about it. Harry's takes care of that. And they want you to start off the new year the right way. New customers right now with Harry's can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and their travel cover for just $3. That would be $3, y'all. Just use my code MOBILE at harrys.com. Here's how it works. Limited time only, Harry's has a special offer for y'all. You'll get $5 off the trial set from Harry's when you use code MOBILE at harrys.com. That means, once again, you get the razor, the weighted handle, that is awesome, foaming shave gel, I love, and the travel cover, all those, $3, and free shipping when you use the code MOBILE at harrys.com. So if you've been, for some reason, on the fence about this when I had a deal that was like $6, it's $3 now. So join the millions like me who've already switched and gone to harrys.com. Go over to harrys.com today. Use our code MOBILE at checkout and claim your offer, and then thank me later. All right. Big thanks to Lanice and Evan Duffy for stopping by, and we'll put the information up about the Go Red for Women event on our Facebook page. And I think they're putting something on Instagram. Although we'll put that, Dalton will get that on the, because Lanice will never let me hear the end of it if we don't get it on our Instagram feed or the Insta, right? Isn't that the Insta? If I could only be so cool. Could be so cool. All right. Is Insta... So is that... I thought it was IG. I thought the hips... I thought the youngsters called it IG.
I think it's Insta. I think Lanise might have you beat on.
She has me beat on it.
Youngsters,
yeah.
Terminology. Hey, we were discussing all the great things that people are doing for the family of Officer Tudor, and I was getting my regular emails from the Next Door app, which I enjoy when it's neighbors yelling at each other.
Yes.
But also because I get the messages from Public Affairs Officer Charlotte Solis, and she passed along the message that they've set up a memorial fund now for Officer Tudor. If you go to www.mobilepd.org/memorial-fund, or if you just go to mobilepd.org, I imagine there's a link there on the front page of the website. But the police department now has set up a place for you to donate to the memorial fund for our fallen officer.
Yeah, I'm seeing this note, and we're going to talk about this. I got a note exactly what you said. The fundraising effort should be made through the Police Foundation that you just talked about. Go to that website, and we'll keep that linked up where you can go there. And so, this is great, because if you're going to have different kind of fundraising events, if you use that foundation, the Mobile Law, Law Enforcement Foundation, or what is the?
It's mobilepd.org, and then .org. It's called the Memorial Fund.
Okay, I'm sure you can get with the people at MPD. You can have the event you're having and have it linked to that fund. And so if people are making donations, it goes right there.
Yeah, and then everyone knows, you can check it. Everything will come up right. You know that with the Mobile Police Department, their money isn't going towards something that you're not giving your money towards.
That's right.
You know that it'll go towards his family.
Good deal. So that's been vetted.
That's right.
Not saying any of the others we've talked about so far haven't been vetted, but that's right there at the police department.
Yeah, and like you said, I'll link this through on our Facebook, but one more time, www.mobilepd.org/memorial-fund.
All right, good stuff. Thanks for the update. Speaking of fallen Officer Tudor, funeral service is set for Friday. Visitation will be tomorrow. There's two visitations. One's tomorrow afternoon evening from 5 to 8. And then another one on Friday morning beginning at 9 that will lead into the funeral service that I think begins at 11 on Friday morning at Dolphin Way Baptist Church. Also got a note here from the family. It says, funeral procession will immediately follow the service. The procession will go on Dolphin Street, come out of Dolphin Way Baptist Church, which, if y'all aren't familiar, you get to the intersection of Dolphin Street and 65, you'll know which one it is. Dolphin Way Baptist Church, it's the big one. All right, so they're going to come out of there and they're going to turn. And the reason I'm telling you this is, if you're not going to the funeral but you want to be out on the streets of Mobile to show your express your condolences and show your appreciation to the family as the procession goes to the graveside there at Mobile Memorial Gardens, they're going to come out of the church, they're going to go down Dolphin Street up to the intersection there where they'll take a left onto McGregor. So they go west and then south on McGregor, crossover airport when McGregor becomes Azalea. Azalea, they'll continue on Azalea down to Government and turn west onto Government, heading out to Three Notch. And Dalton and I were talking about this morning. If you think about it through that region, I mean, there's a little bit of area right there by the church, whether you would be maybe on the parking lot at Spring Hill Hospital or across the street, you got Atlanta Bread and those shops right there where you could be. In addition, as you go and turn on McGregor and head south, when McGregor gets to airport, you have parking lot on both sides there, at that intersection where you could park in a parking lot and stand. I'm not saying park on the road. You park in the parking lot and stand on the road, not in the road, but next to it. And then if you go south where it becomes Azalea, think about all that parking lot down the west side of Azalea there, the whole way to where the neighborhood starts by where Michael comes in from the east. Then you go down Government. Think about the intersection there at Azalea and Government. There's parking lot there. And then you turn on Government, parking lot on both sides. And then, of course, more places as you head down 90. So quite a few places to get, and we'll talk about this more as it gets closer. I remember what it was like, God forbid, I mean, just 11 months ago when Officer Billa was laid to rest, and that funeral procession that had, first of all, it stretched from the church to the grave the whole way. There were cars occupying that procession. It was that long. But the folks in Mobile here, we had all lined up on the streets to honor Officer Billa. I think the same thing will happen on Friday. So just kind of thinking through maybe where you might be in town, where you go to stand there as the family comes by. All right, that information, like Dalton said, that and the donation information and any kind of event coming up, that information's on our Facebook page. I'll put it up on the Twitter feed as well, at FM Talk 1065. And yeah, like my friend Lenny said, the Insta. I call it Instagram, but I am the old fogey around here. All right, Paul Feinbaum on the way next. Maybe we could rehash the bad call again. Back 2 hours on that, right? And they are, oh, by the way, it comes out to they are going to replay the game? No? Okay. I'd like to start that rumor. Yeah, it is. They just confirmed it. They're replaying the game, and the Saints will win this time. All right, see y'all mañana for Mobile Mornings online, fmtalk1065.com.